just scrummed. Canadians get it back into the corner. Caulfield trying to come out in front. The puck comes free. Another shot. Knocked away in front of the goal. 2 seconds left. They're still at it. Armia's going to run out of time. And Jack Campbell soups his way to a big 2-1 victory over the Maple Leafs. 18 victories in his last two seasons with Toronto.
Joe Bowen on the call. It is a Leafs Nation postgame. Brent Gunning, Gord Stellick alongside me. What a way to start the season. A 2-1 win at home over the Montreal Canadiens. We have Justin Bourne standing by on the line. But first, I'll say hello to my co-host, Gord Stellick. Gord, not a bad start other than the actual start of the game.
Yeah, you know, lots of positives for sure. Great to see the fans back in the building. And you forget, they had a really solid regular season. We think too much about the playoffs. And the key last year to me was finding ways to win games, which had eluded them the previous season. I thought this was a good example tonight in their season opener.
Yep, we want to hear from you guys as well. Text line's wide open, 590-590. Please include your name and location. We also want to hear from this man, Justin Bourne. You hear him all the time. Loving the duo with Kipper, and Sam McKee's basically a third co-host on that. Bourne, how you doing, bud? Love hearing you, and thanks for coming on tonight.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. You know, we'd be good if the Leafs were good. That'd be a lot of fun for Kipper and I. But yeah, thanks for having me kick off the season.
So far, so good. Again, like I said, aside from the start, early on, that was about as bad and flat of a start, aside from Jack Campbell, as you could have asked for. And, you know, I definitely had some worries early on, but they were able to turn it around after what felt like just a slog of 10 minutes at the start for me.
Yeah, it's actually really curious, isn't it? It's like the fans hadn't been there, the building hadn't been full in a long time, and you kind of felt like you owed the fans a show. The team that just, you know, your direct rival that upset you in a terrible way in the previous season, like, you really expected this team to come out just guns a-blazing, and it was the complete opposite of that. It's almost like there was too much pressure and excitement because guys were running around out of position, D-man getting caught up ice. They had to rely on Jack Campbell in the early going, and he helped them get through that and find their game, and that's the absolute turning point, the difference in the game for me.
So, Justin, first of all, you got to understand, Kippy worked with Doug McLean for so long, so, you know, he struggles. They struggle for airtime, and he'll come down to earth a little bit that way, just so you know.
We'll have you on for an hour every day, Stel. Hey, Gordy, appreciate that the other day.
Yeah, no, that was fun. That was fun on Thanksgiving Monday. The show's been a lot of fun, but like I said, yeah, with Doug, I love Doug, but it was always a struggle that way to get a word in edgewise. Now, yeah, you know, you really don't want your goaltender tested like that. But hey, if he's going to be tested, you want to come up with that huge save early. I mean, that could have made it kind of an ugly start, which could have turned into an ugly game. And, you know, Justin, we forget Jack Campbell had Johnny Bauer type statistics last year for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah. I mean, but again, the playoff where he didn't play badly, but he got out goaltended like everyone else seemed to get outplayed when it.
Nope. I think I just lost Gord there. It's always fun doing these shows. You never quite know. I'll jump in there with him. You never quite know what you're going to get on these type of games. And you know, I'll actually direct it to a player that I've spoke with you about so much, Bourne, over the years. I mean, he had a goal tonight, so it makes sense that we talk about him. You know, first game of the Leafs season, I'd like to talk about, you know, Mitch Marner, John Tavares. But Pierre Engvall, it keeps being a fluctuating thing, riding the wave of is he or not a guy? What can you get out of him on any given night? And tonight felt like just the ultimate highlight tape of why he can be so tantalizing and frustrating.
I think there's a misconception that Sheldon Keefe doesn't like him, but what Sheldon Keefe doesn't like is that he thinks he's so good, he shouldn't have to use a cattle prod to get him motivated to be his best self as often as he seems to, because he believes that this is there. Like, you know, tonight, if you went through the lineup and talked about who their best players were, Pierre Engvall was certainly one of them. And not just the play he makes on the goal, though that's no small thing, being able to pump a shot and rip one home. But, you know, just every touch of the puck, one thing that he seems to have changed, and I don't know if it's a conscious effort or it's just one game, was he's going the right way with the puck. Like, you know, when they first got Keith in and they talked about that possession style and everyone, it was okay to run it back and regroup. Like, Engvall was a criminal offender at skating the puck towards his own zone. He got the puck going in the right direction tonight. So that's a big contributor for things going well for him.
I'm so happy you made that point about Keith and Engvall, because I think if he didn't like him, he just wouldn't comment on him. And sometimes you're asked directly about a player and you have to comment, but there are plenty of times where it's a choose your own adventure with Sheldon Keith. And boy, 47 keeps finding his way back and back and back to the topic of conversation. You know, I'll just kind of expand that thought to that line in general. You know, he had his best success last year with that hem line when he was playing with Kerfoot and Hyman. And, you know, obviously Kampf and Kasha are different players than those guys, but I felt like even early on, the first shift they got out there felt like the first shift the Leafs had something going on, and it just felt like that line really kind of, I won't say carried the play, because that's not what they're there to do, but just comported themselves really well on opening night.
I agree. I like that line a lot. Kasha kind of reminds me of Mikheyev in a way that, like, he doesn't seem to execute the end of all the sequences, but he does a lot of things really well. You know, that's not to say that Kasha can't score. He's scored 20 in the league before. But, you know, I like a lot of the things he does. He makes a lot of good little plays. He's aggressive. He's physical. Seems like a smart player. So I like him. And then, yeah, Engvall being a part of that line seems like a pretty natural fit. Engvall reminds me of like a Kapanen in that it doesn't matter what line he's on. He's always going to give you the same thing because he doesn't really work with his other line mates. Like, this line is kind of like three independently decent players who help the team. I don't know that Engvall's ever a give and go work with his line mates type of guy, but I did like the three of them as a trio, particularly when they're going to be your third line and PK guys, and you don't have to get them out there, you know, over 15 minutes a night.
And I'll bring back in Gord, sorry, I just want to make a quick point here. It is so funny to see how quickly confidence can just kind of shoot through.
Oh, did we lose Gunner there? You there, Gord?
I am here, yes.
All right, lost Guns. Well, okay, I'll hand it to you.
The trials and tribute. I don't know about the tribute he was going to give Pierre Engvall, but I was going to give a tribute about talk about three. The two man disadvantage. I mean, that was one. What was about $1.50 or so? They're down 2-1, and again, when I talk about the ability in one goal games to win them, and that's what really impressed me with them last year in the regular season. That was a real good, energetic, aggressive penalty kill when they were two down.
Yeah, no, really good for sure. You know, the highlight of it being the Justin Hall, you know, getting back and making a save. I think with his back, he made the save. But it was aggressive at the blue line in terms of not letting them get set up. And I don't know how often you encourage an aggressive 3-on-5 penalty kill. But, you know, when you get the chance to go, you go. And that's the biggest thing, is just not letting the team set up. I wonder, though, and, you know, get your thoughts on this too. How big a difference not having Shea Weber, you know, how much that makes for Montreal, not having that big threat at the top. That seems huge to me.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I'm back here. We're playing like Clark Kent in the telephone booth, just jumping in and out of the hit here. Brent Gunning, Gord Stellick, joined by Justin Bourne on Leafs Nation postgame here and kicking off things with a win. I agree with what you say about the idea of it was really interesting to see. It's one thing to be aggressive on a 5-on-4. You have more room to make up for it. The lanes are a little tighter. You can kind of actually pressure because there's just less real estate to work with for each guy. But I think it's a completely different animal when you have a guy like Shea Weber there. But it felt like, I don't know how either of you guys feel about this. Gord, I'll throw it over to you. It felt like they still were acting like Shea Weber was back there. Like, it was just heavy point shots from distance on a 5-on-3. And with guys like Suzuki and guys like Caulfield, it just felt like that isn't how you should attack. I mean, the Leafs will take it any day, but it did feel like they almost thought Shea Weber was going to just appear at some point in time.
Yeah, I guess I kind of see what you're talking about. It's funny, you know, and another one I was going to throw Justin's way was about Brendan Gallagher. Like it's interesting he's making part of the salary cap world, and you got to respect that he's been a lifer so far and what he's done, but he's kind of back on the third line again and not getting a lot of power play time. And I don't, you know, for a guy that, you know, could be very, very valuable in the playoffs. So, you know, it's interesting as you try to fit all these things out, because Brent, you talked about Montreal. I don't know where you see them, Justin. Like, I kind of, Montreal fans will jump all over us, see, you never picked us, which I didn't in the playoffs. And, you know, good on you, enjoy the run. But I don't see them making the playoffs this year.
No, I mean, 2 years ago, I think they were 24th in the league, and they got into that weird play-in because of the, you know, they had 24 teams in. And then last year, they were 18th in the league, you know, in terms of overall points league-wide, but they got in by the skin of their teeth to go on the run that they did. I don't see how they're going to be a better team. You know, they lost. The line that was very good with Brendan Gallagher was Gallagher, Tatar, and Deneau was one of the best lines analytically in the NHL. Whether they were or not is, I don't know, but they were good. And then no Weber, no Price. Like, these are significant blows. And, like, Christian Dvorak's good, but you're taking a team that was middle of the pack at best in the last two regular seasons, and I think they're a little bit worse. And that division, with at least four other top-end teams, I don't see them finding their way in either.
Yeah, I didn't even believe it was happening when I saw it with my own eyes, them in the cup final, and you just nailed it. The goaltender's not there. The defense stalwart, not there. They're number three pick overall from just a couple years ago, no longer there. I know they got Dvorak, but I'm with you. I do want to bring it back to the Leafs here, and when I'm looking at a guy tonight, maybe the guy I had my eye most closely tuned to was Rasmus Sandin, because I just think that he will kind of unlock a lot of what the Leafs can do this year. It feels to me like if that third pair really jumps and takes a leap, it's because of his play. We kind of know what Travis Dermott is, not to say he can't make strides, but it feels like it'll come from Sandin. He had a couple of rough turnovers early on, but he just finds ways to kind of make the right play. And what did you make of his game tonight?
I thought he was great. You know, we have our group chat for the show, and he was one of the names that I had on the positive list for the night. You know, he got a couple of shots through from the point. He rung one off off the crossbar. He just looks agile and confident, and seems to see the rink really well. I trust him, you know, and I know that he's young and he'll make mistakes, as you mentioned, a couple of turnovers, but I feel like he's a guy that has the poise and that calm demeanor. You know, I don't know if it's a Swedish thing or not, but, like, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of panic in some of the Swedes I'm more familiar with, within the Marlies organization at least. He definitely has that trait, no panic button, and I think that bodes well for a guy who handles the puck as much as he does.
You know, by the way, Brent, I figured it out about, you know, us dropping off. It's one of Justin Bourne's rogue cats that kind of are on
gotta
the prowl
be
all the time.
That gotta I think, be it. I cats think in the system.
Yeah, flick one of the switches. I like the way Sandin played as well, and Justin. And I also like that it wasn't a thing where four defensemen got 20 minutes and two defensemen got 10 minutes. I mean, he and Dermott got the fewest minutes, but there really wasn't a huge disparity. I when you're the young guy and you want to show confidence early on, I can't stand that when they get 11 minutes all the time and are just afraid of any mistake. I mean, you got to let them go in the deep end of the pool, and every now and then you got to let them grab that little rope that they hold out there when you're swimming lengths and just go back in.
Well, I've just been waiting for that to happen with Dermott. Like, at what point are you just going to say, okay, here's 18 minutes a night, can you play? And if you can't, we don't, you know, we'll find someone who can. I think we're in year four here of generally giving the guy 11:54, 13:12, 12:58. Like, I think he can handle a little bit more. So I do hope that with Sandin there on that third pair, they see them as a pair they can use more. And, you know, this is something that Kip has talked about on our show, is that, you know, things didn't go well for Dermott under Dave Hakstol. You know, for whatever reason, some guys just don't jive with other guys. Hakstol was deploying the D, and, you know, things didn't get better for Dermott over the course of the season. If you know, he works better with Dean Chenault, and, you know, Sandin is good, they could have a third pair that, you know, to your point, you could be playing 16 minutes a night and ease the burden on a guy like Riley.
When I wonder too if what it is there is that, you know, as much as Bogosian was the perfect kind of, I don't know, father figure, for lack of a better term, to throw beside him, it feels to me like, you know, with a veteran player like that, a player like Dermott, I felt like I saw him defer a little bit at times to Bogosian. And that's fine when it's deferring on decision-making in the defensive zone. But I feel like with a guy like Sandin, and not to say Sandin's some wooden-footed defenseman, but I think we all think of him as like a slightly better skater than he is. He's really smart. He makes great passes, but it should be Dermott skating the puck out if it's going to be one of those two guys. And it just feels like a really clean fit as a pair for me.
Yeah, what I'm curious to see is, like, are they going to be heavy enough against the big teams in front of their own net? Like, at some point you need someone to play those sort of that role in those positions. I love regular season hockey, 82 games. You know, the more good players you have on the ice that can skate it out and move it and make plays, the better. you know, not as confident, and this could be, you know, where the issue, part of where the issue lied with them last year. Just, I'm not as confident, you know, come playoff hockey. So we'll see how they develop. Maybe Dermott finds a physical edge and a little bit of extra grit out there. But for now, it seems like, yeah, it was lovely tonight. I still don't know if big picture, it's an awesome third pair.
Borny, thanks so much for the time tonight. You can hear more wonderful insight like that on Real Kipper and Born, of course, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan tomorrow. Borny, thanks so much, bud.
Anytime. Thanks a lot, guys.
There he goes, Justin Born. Gord, I mean, the start was what it was. I think sometimes you all expect, or we all expect, the team to come out and play with, you know, this immense fire, and I think that sometimes you can get yourself in trouble running around a little too much, but it really felt to me like the game kind of settled in after the first 10 minutes of that first period, because it was the game could have got out of hand early on there.
Yeah, you know, and Brandon, it was kind of a weird one about, I know, in the playoffs, a lot of visiting teams, or actually the home teams and visiting teams, they, so much is made, so much pomp and circumstance and ceremony, that actually the road teams get kind of psyched and the home teams get a little bit drained. And, you know, we weren't down there tonight. We're looking forward to being at Scotiabank Arena. It must have been really neat being there. They did a really good job. I thought that the game night ops did, but man, it's the first time, what, in about 500 days, you've had fans in the building. So there were just a lot. There was a lot of pent-up emotions going into the game. And to your point, you know, quite often that doesn't necessarily transcend into, okay, let's go out and kick ass and score twice in the first 7-8 minutes. Sometimes it was a bit helter-skelter, you know, whether they were trying too hard or whatever it may be. And Montreal definitely had the edge. And the key thing is, boy, you love when your goaltender makes that first big save. I'm sure he wasn't thrilled. It was like in the first 3 seconds, but he did that. And then, yeah, it did settle down. And then other times when it opened up, I thought it opened up in the Leafs' favor more than Montreal's favor.
Yeah, that second period, it felt like they really, really carried the pace of play. At the end of the game, I mean, we've seen this, and this isn't a Leafs thing. I think there are some teams who do a better job of this, but we see it all the time, where a team is kind of clinging to a one-goal lead, and you go a little bit away from the kind of tactics you like to use, and it's just kind of house on fire, get the puck out of our end, and that definitely happened at the end. But for the middle section of that game, specifically the second period, it felt like the Leafs really, really, really carried the play. Then you mentioned the crowd there. Yeah, of course, you know, lulls, stops, but that crowd was ready after the 5-on-3 penalty kill. Like, the building just took off, and you're right, we're gonna be down there on Saturday. I can't wait to hear a moment like that. We've opined a lot, and we'll opine some more, but our producer Sam McKee poking around, of course you hear him on the aforementioned Real Kipper and Born. McKee, what were your big takeaways from tonight for first Leafs 2-1 win?
Well, good evening, fellas. Sounding great today.
Yes, hello also. Yes.
Sounding great tonight, boys. Yeah, I would say that the player introductions, the crowd didn't seem too excited about anybody, did they? Like, was that the
Tavares,
most...
that's it.
Spezza, I feel like, got the biggest pop, yep, maybe, but I was really kind of surprised at how subdued the fans were, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised, you know. This team is, I wouldn't say, giving them a ton of reasons to cheer in the postseason over the past few years, so seeing them kind of sit on their hands a bit during the intro, but the crowd pop on the Willie goal was really big, and I'm sure you guys have been talking about it, but just seeing the people in the stands aesthetically, as opposed to seeing those big old tarps over the seats, what a nice change of pace that was, eh?
You know, I of course, hockey's my game. I love all sports, but I got to say, I don't know what it is. The fans support them in volumes. They pay top dollar for tickets. Tickets are really hard to get traditionally. They will be once again this year, I gotta believe. But there just is not an energy in that building like there is for Toronto Raptor games, or even like Toronto Blue Jays games. I was really impressed, like it was. And I mean, there have been times, don't get me wrong, there have been times, but I really hope it can get kind of that home arena vibe and buzz. A big part of it would be a winning team would help. But yeah, I know what you mean, Sam. I wonder if just a lot of people that, you know, it's just a hassle to go anywhere. And good on the people that went. There's still a lot of people that say, I'll go somewhere, but I'm not going to go right now. And I think just, you're it was almost like, whew, I'm in my seat now. Whoa, that's good. Double vaccination I showed. The tickets are first time ever. They're not printed tickets, yada, yada, yada. So, I know what you mean. I thought it was a nice presentation, but they did not bring the house down.
No, and I think the thing we all think of, right, is like at least the recent iteration of gold standards of this is like the bless you boys goal, and the camera is literally shaking. You can't even see what is happening on the ice in the celebration because everyone's going so nuts. But that's what happens when you win, right? Like it feels like there will be moments of that. And look, Matthew's going to score a hat trick at home, and William Nylander's going to have a two-goal night, and Mitch Marner's going to make some crazy highlight plays on the power play, and the building is going to get loud for stretches and moments like it did after that 5-on-3. But it's the thing we've talked about with this team for a couple of years now. The vast majority of the fan base is saying, great, great. You 2-1 win tonight. That's lovely. 5-on-3 penalty kill. We love it. Do it in April, do it in May, do it in the second round of the playoffs. And I think at a certain point in time this year, people will get over that, not in the grand scheme of things, but in the building, and it'll pick back up a little. But I do think there's still that kind of hangover, even from the fan base. I think you kind of saw it tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, can we just quickly talk about the fourth line again here? How did they – I don't want to be too negative on opening night, but Simmons on a two-year deal looks like something that could be a little bit worrisome for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I didn't think Amadio brought anything, and Spezza looked a step slower to me. So I know it's opening night. I don't want to get too negative. They had a big win, but boy, that fourth line did not look too hot tonight, fellas.
You watch your tongue on Spezza looking slow. I'll be honest, I'm not sure if he beat it out or the puck just didn't get all the way down, but nearly beat out an icing call, so he's still got a little, but I think it's a fair point to make. Amadio feels to me like a placeholder that will not exist on this roster once Austin Matthews is back to being your first-line center. I think we were all a little surprised to kind of see him there. And then I think with Simmons, you're going to have to almost do a bit of the... And I don't know what the cap machinations are that will allow them to do this, but it feels like he almost might have to do the game management thing. Like early on in the season, maybe not, but is he playing back-to-backs when January rolls around? Maybe not. And I think that that's what you have to do with a player like that, because this is not Wayne Simmons of 3-4 years ago. You can't just throw him out there for 14 minutes a night and expect to get it. I still think you'll have nights where he really matters, and I think if you use him smartly, you can. And most importantly, once the top of that lineup fills out, mostly Matthews coming back, it allows you to kind of get away with that fourth line a little more to have that element that Simmons brings.
Yeah, and I'm with you. You can't say anything bad about Jason Spezza to me. I mean, you know, if we're going to, you know, break things down, and they do grade things game by game. They do that, but I'm totally sold on his value. Simmons, I mean, there was an unevenness to his year with the Leafs last year, and he had two back-to-back New Jersey, Nashville, Buffalo, not great seasons there after being what we know he could do in Philadelphia. And I think just the physical part brings such value and is so important for him on the team that it's understood. So he can't just sit on the bench and then all of a sudden, if it's a real physical game, play 12 minutes and otherwise play six. So I know he got hurt probably when he played his best game of the year last year, which was unfortunate. So I see him in kind of a unique role. But hey, and you know, the other guy, first game, opening night, all that stuff, trying to get a feel and that. You get a game. If you get a feel and you get going, you get in a groove, it's all good. You know, to your point, Sam, I think they never really did get going. I agree with that, you know. So you didn't get in that kind of flow. And they got okay minutes. But that way. But, yeah, if you're going to look at something, that wasn't a vintage game for them.
Well, and the other thing about it, too, is that, you know, and not that this is an audition of sorts, because I think when Matthews is back, Marner is going to be alongside Austin Matthews, and Nylander and Tavares will be playing together. But it's, if you were even looking for a world where you're asking yourself the question of, should you flip the wingers with those two centers? It wasn't, and again, it's one game, it was the first game of the season, all that stuff, but it wasn't like it was some, you know, razzle-dazzle highlight tape real game from Tavares and Marner as a tandem there.
So, of all the newcomers, boys, who jumped off the page to you the most?
I'll go first. Come on. One assist, 15 cross checks in the back, eating it in front of the net. Michael Bunting, man.
Stupid question.
No, look, it's like, I know, like, I'm kind of doing a bit of, it's like, oh, Michael Bunting, but it was just exactly what you wanted. When the game wasn't going well at the very start, it's a little thing, but he takes a run at a guy in the neutral zone, just showing he's alive, he's awake, he's in the game. He draws a penalty, they score on the power play, he gets an assist. Like, it was exactly what you wanted. It was not some earth-shattering, I'm not giving him an A++. Like, it's not like he had a better game than William Nylander. I'm not saying any of that, but it's just in terms of coming as advertised and being that guy, He was that guy. So I got to give it to Bunting.
Well, you look at Kampf, 17 minutes, 34 seconds of ice time, 3:51, killing penalties. I mean, I was impressed about that.
This is
kind
the right
of
answer. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Justin Bourne, I heard him today with Kipper, and he brought up all these guys this year, because we were talking about Wayne Simmonds earlier, that the Maple Leafs, whether it was the Joe Thorntons of the world or what have you, they added guys that were 30-something, and this year they seem to be adding the 25, 26-year-old. You know, just not quite as old, but also not a 22-year-old. Like, they're just all these new players coming in that they've seen glimmers of real strong play, and then they've had inconsistent play. But, yeah, for a couple of newcomers and not new to the NHL, I thought they accorded themselves very well.
Yeah, McKee, who'd you like?
I loved Kampf too, and you know, he was a guy that I didn't necessarily think you were going to be kind of really enticed by, but you can really see why they were willing to go over that $1 million range with him and kind of give him a couple years here, because you can tell he's a big guy, he's in the right spots a lot of time, he had a great back check, I think it was on Suzuki there when it was a big spot, comes in. I really liked what I saw from him too. You know, Kasha had some moments, he seems like a type of guy that maybe not quite to the same level as Mikheyev, but a guy that may, you know, have a lot of moments, but not necessarily shoot a lot of them in the net. He just kind of seemed to be around the puck, but didn't necessarily have the touch to finish him. So we'll see how that goes early later on in the season. But I really loved what I saw from Kampf tonight, and I did not expect to come on here and say that.
No, I'll echo all that as well. And I maintain, like, when the first good shift of the game from the Leafs was from the Kampf line. I think it was about the 16-minute mark. They'd been getting caved in. It was odd man rush after odd man rush. And there was a lot of moments like that where they didn't change things. It wasn't like they had the big offensive cycle going and they were just caving in somebody's line. But it was just a matter of the game always kind of feeling somewhat safe when he was on the ice. And then at the very end of, I think it was the second period there, when they had iced the puck and they had all of the they had Spezza and Kampf were out on the ice for like a minute 16, and just the fact that he's able to keep his head above water well dog tired and still be good defensively, I think that really shows something as well.
And you know, and one other point, and I know everyone knows about it, they won't be in the lineup again tomorrow and he won't be on Saturday, but when you're without your best player, and you know, someone who is a finalist for the Hart Trophy, somebody who wins the Rocket Richard Trophy, I mean, you know, who would have thought tonight Nathan MacKinnon would be out of the lineup for the Colorado Avalanche, and Alexander Ovechkin, all those question marks. The guy gets 4 points tonight. Will he play against the New York Rangers? 2 goals and 2 assists for Ovi, and they won 5-1. And it just, I just, you know, there's very few players. I mean, Alexander Ovechkin's on that. The Austin Matthews is kind of the new Ovi in many ways. But boy, when you're missing your star player, that's a big hole. And I know the Leafs' record is ridiculous. Like, the record's good without Austin Matthews, just like the Penguins' record is good without Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, which makes no sense. But that guy, you know, that's a big guy that would be nice to have back in Toronto.
So our good buddy, Steve Fellin, and the crew at Sportsnet Stats hooking us up with those numbers. The Leafs' record in games without Austin Matthews, 24-13-2. And the power play is clicking at nearly 30%. So make of that what you will out there. Because, I mean, look, numbers make sense sometimes. Those don't make a lick of it. We're going to make some sense of this Leafs 2-1 win over the Canadiens. What to expect tomorrow night in Ottawa. Plus, we'll hear from some of the principals. Brent Gunning, Gord Stellick, and producer Sam McKee are here with you for Leafs Nation postgame.
We need to talk about what just happened. This is Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Leafs Radio Network.
Marner turning back deeper into the Toronto zone, thinks about heading to the bench, and now will, as Riley carries the puck to center. Up on the right side, Nylander breaking in on the wing. Score! Holy mackinaw, Wee Willie snaps it home, and the Leafs have a 2-1 lead.
Leafs Nation postgame. Brent Gunning, Gord Stellick here alongside me. You just heard Joe Bowen on the call there, of course. He loves calling out Willie Nylander goals. He loves calling all Leaf goals, but he puts a little extra on the Nylander ones, I think, and I love the call there. Love the shot, little Jason Spezza-like shot fake from Nylander. Actually, yeah, on the Nylander goal there, Engvall even threw a little bit of one in as well. Somebody who didn't have to deal with Jason Spezza tonight because he plays on his team is Leafs goaltender Jack Campbell. Here he is following his first and the Leafs' first win of the season.
Jack, your first career start on an opening night back in front of a full building here again in Toronto. What was this night like to be a part of for you?
It was just incredible for the entire group to have the fans back. We missed them so much, and you know, it's such an advantage having a Leafs Nation in the building, and they were loud, they were cheering us on all night, and I think that gave us the edge to come away with the big victory.
So Montreal came out hot, and they made the push there at the end. How are you able to stay calm in between it all?
I mean, we've seen those guys a lot. I have total faith in the boys in front of me, and they bailed me out a couple times. Justin Hall with an absolutely massive block, and I owe him dinner for sure. And you know, all the boys just competed all night. We had a bunch of guys blocking shots on the PK the whole night, and I maybe one or two got off to the net the whole night. So I owe the whole team.
You mentioned the block by Justin Hall there on the 5-on-3. It looked like he had a smile on his face as he skated by and you gave him a tap afterwards. What did you say to him?
I just told him, you know, I owe him dinner, and it was a heck of a play by him, and that's what we need out of Halsey. He's a huge player for us, and he brought it tonight.
One final one for you, Jack. You were saying yesterday, you know, at this point in your career, you expect now to be at your best anytime you're in the net for the guys that play in front of you. How powerful and how impactful can internal expectations be for someone like you?
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I believe in myself, and I just believe my standard for myself. I expect to be at that level every night and to give these guys a chance because they're out there working so hard every night. And, you know, if they do their job every night, I just got to try my best to make a couple saves, and they take care of the rest. So it's fun to be a part of.
Winning goaltender Jack Campbell alongside, I don't know, maybe the guy with the best hair in the business, Kyle Bukauskas, interviewing him there. Of course, Jack Campbell, the second star tonight. William Nylander first. Jake Allen getting nod as the third star there. I thought that was an interesting question that Campbell kind of asked, or Bukauskas asked Campbell there about his own expectations. Because, look, you know, he went on the run and he became the guy he became last year, but I don't know that he had time to sit back and think about it. I guess maybe a little when he got himself hurt and he was kind of on the sidelines, but it feels like this is just such a different beast going into the season, being at least a 1A, if not the number one. Like, I think it's a very interesting place that Campbell finds himself in.
Well, it's the first time he hasn't been a backup goaltender. You know, last year he was still a backup goaltender, and the question every year, oh my good, and oh, the worst thing that Leaf fans learned was load management with Kawhi Leonard, and oh my goodness, now with Freddie Anderson, got to get some load management. And, well, load management, you got to get a decent backup goaltender, which had been eluding them. And then he got this chance, and because of Freddie's injury dragging on, he got a chance to run with it. So here he comes as that number one guy starting an opening game. And also neat with fans there. I mean, I think, you know, that's he did all. I'm not saying he did that last year because there were no fans. Remember, he did it when he came over in the trade the year before, a few games when there were fans. He really, I don't know, whatever it was, Toronto has seemed to really agree for a guy that was the number one goaltender picked his year in the draft and took about almost 8 years to try to find himself.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it did, and you just hope he can continue with whatever he found last year. Now, so back-to-back tomorrow, Mrazek's getting in. I don't think there's any question at all about that. The next back-to-back is not the coming Friday, but next week, Friday, Saturday. Do we think there will be a split of the games in between? The Leafs play the Senators Saturday and then the Rangers on Monday. Like, how much do you think they'll kind of give Campbell the ball to run with it a little bit, and how much do you think it'll be a true kind of 50-50 split?
Well, I think 50-50 at the start because as long as they don't go 0-5 and one, well, they can't, but say 0-5 in the next five games, and you know, one guy really has a terrible two games. I think they got to get Peter Mrazek acclimated. I mean, he's a guy with more playoff experience than Jack Campbell has. He's actually had some playoff success, so I just think, Brent, at the start, that all things being equal, whether it's the first four games, six games, eight games, 10 games. They'll do the 50-50, and then you start doing a little bit of, you know, maybe a little bit leeway that depend who is hot and depend who's just not going well.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think you can have a world where Mrazek is just kind of treated as the backup and he's coming in kind of cold. And again, like it shouldn't matter all that much. You think professional goaltender, but it's completely different playing in front of behind a different team than the group he had there in Carolina. So yeah, I think you do kind of have to go 50-50 split for at least the first 10 games or so. And again, if one guy just doesn't have it, this is of course completely different. McKee, where are you at on the goaltending here? I mean, it's just such a, I mean, I just like what I would give to just have the guy. Like, this is going to, I know, just gnaw at my insides all season long. Once we get past the kind of 50-50 split, when it is decisions that are being made, I know it's the right move. I know it's the way of the new NHL, but it just is still so hard for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah, and listen, this is the new norm. This is the new sort of inefficiency, is finding two goalies for under a certain amount of money that you can kind of ride here. But I think it's a pretty clear, even though Mrazek makes twice the money that Campbell does, I think it's a pretty clear message starting Jack Campbell in the first game that he's kind of their go-to guy. No, like, he was their starter in the playoffs last year. He was pretty good. You know, he had some really big moments. He kind of got outplayed by Carey Price in a couple spots, but that's not necessarily his fault. That's more about Carey Price. But I think I love what I saw from Jack Campbell tonight, and I think that's a really nice start to have that under your belt and to kind of set that standard for Peter Mrazek to kind of live up to, which is a really important thing. These guys are going to be battling all year, and we had Cujo on Real Kipper and Born today. Well, not a big plug by me there, and he was just talking about how these guys could probably be friends, especially Jack Campbell. But deep down, it's going to be a really competitive thing, and I think that's going to turn out to be really good for the Toronto Maple Leafs to have two guys that they can kind of lean on.
Yeah, I think they had to acknowledge Jack Campbell a start for what he did last year. But you mentioned that, okay, so he got outplayed by Carey Price. They still got out goaltended, right? They've got out goaltended every playoff, and that was Freddie's downfall as well. And so, you know, you got to have both these guys ready and ramped up to be, you know, both viable options, just like we talked about the fourth line earlier. We, you know, the Leafs have to have that ramped up to provide some depth in games where the big guns don't come through and make a difference in a particular playoff game. I mean, that's again, we all roads point to game number 83 all the time, but in the interim, we have to talk about the other 82, and we look forward to doing that.
Yes, we do, and we'll be with you after each and every Leafs game, of course, including tomorrow night. They'll be in Ottawa. We'll be live at the studio getting ready, have you for the intermissions as well, because the game will be on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Then Saturday night, we'll be down at the rink, of course, Scotiabank Arena. Can't wait for that. One thing that I noticed tonight, and look, like anytime officiating gets brought up, no one's ever happy with it, other than if it's really one-sided, and then, gee, one side's happy with it. But there was such an emphasis made on the cross-checking and the hooks and all that. And then, look, I know I have my eyes trained on this guy, but Michael Bunting must have eaten about 10 cross-checks in the back just standing in front. And it's just always that's one moment in the game, but it's just always funny how quickly, and not to say I think the officiating is going to completely go away from this, and I'll throw this to you, Gord, but it is amazing how quickly the emphasis, and it always feels like a month and change into the season, we're more or less back to where we started in terms of the way the game is called.
Well, we saw last night something that was changed 10 years ago, the Chandler Stevenson goal, and talking to Coley Campbell, the vice president of ops for the NHL, he's mentioned ever since 2005, they came out of the lockout. The previous Stanley Cup a year earlier had been Tampa Bay, Calgary, just a low scoring, boring, nobody could get any offense going. So they looked to punish defense and help create offense. So that's what all these moves are done. That's why this clampdown and cross-checking is being done as well. You're right tonight. I can't think, like, you know, you go by things, the kind of the beating Auston Matthews took one game, if you considered it that, but certainly what happened to Kucherov. I mean, those are the kind of plays, that's the kind of thing they're looking to try to protect the scores a bit more. And you're right, it'll be an uneven start, and there'll be a lot of unevenness during the course of the season.
What are you expecting tomorrow night in Ottawa? Because I think that, you know, it's always interesting when you have a team that's been kind of sitting home and cool, and they're going to have all the energy that you were supposed to have tonight. Like, it's just always such a unique environment when you have one team who's coming in on a back-to-back. And look, it's their second game of the season, not to say they're dog-tired or anything, but then you have a team at home that's starting off. And, yeah, I know they won't have Tkachuk in the fold in all likelihood, but it's still going to be a, you know, relatively electric building there. It's just such a unique dynamic.
Go for the juggler. go for the juggler. This is a wounded team, and Matt Murray not feeling well, so not available for tomorrow night as well. And your heart and soul guy, Brady Tkachuk. I mean, this is different than when William Nylander went to the 11th hour. The Maple Leafs had John Tavares, Austin Matthews, and Mitch Marner in the lineup right up till then. So I'm expecting a Leaf team that should come out loaded for bear and give them a thrashing.
Yeah, that's what I would expect as well. And I have, you know, beating up on the Ottawa Senators, a bit of a hobby horse of mine, but they've kind of made it easy on me lately. And I think that, you know, for whatever I've said about Montreal, there's a lot more talent on that team than there is on Ottawa. They have some high-end guys. When Tkachuk's in the lineup, yes. Shabbat, when he's going well, of course. But there's no reason you shouldn't take care of business against that team. All right, one final game I'll play with you, and I'll get the both of you to weigh in here before we wrap things up here. William Nylander, first star. Jack Campbell, second star. We're not going to give Jake Allen the third star here on Leafs Nation postgame, because why would I give a Montreal Canadiens player a star? If I am giving you the option to give one more star to a Leaf, is it too simple to just say Pierre Engvall?
I'll go. How about this one? I'll go with Justin Hall for that shot block. How's that sound?
Love it. Gord, do you have a third star for us?
So, sorry, the first two are
Nylander and Campbell.
Oh, I'd give Engvall the third one, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, you look at Sam's attention span isn't very big, so he just gets one shot, and it's kind of shiny white object, and he goes with that.
Bang on, Gordo. You know me well.
I look at the complete body of work in a full 60 minutes.
Oh, the way his night was going, I'm a little surprised that Sam McKee didn't give his third star of the night to Alphonso Davies for the big goal he scored for Canada's soccer team. There you go, bud. That's the last we're talking about it, but I snuck that in there just for you. Really, really fun show today. Gord, we got our flow going in the preseason, and, you know, I'll even say with our little technical difficulties off the top there, it was almost like the first 10 minutes of the Leafs game. But guess what? We come back. We battle back. I don't know what our power play goal was. Maybe that was Justin Bourne coming through. Maybe that's what it was, but we were resilient and we battled through a great first show in the regular season. We'll be back tomorrow night, Gord.
Yeah, Justin Bourne's the only guy who didn't drop out. The three of us did at different times, so maybe he's the guy that killed the two-person penalty. But, looking forward. The game is on the Fan 590 tomorrow, so we got it, so can't wait.
There it is. Producer Sam McKee, Justin Bourne, thanks to both of those. Thanks to you for listening. Gord Stellick, Brent Gunning here with you for Leafs Nation postgame. We'll be with you after every single game throughout the season and hopefully a lengthy playoff run. Thank you for listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network.